take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Tuesday, August 25th, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the program. We're here every weekday, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific time, three plays at 6 p.m., 3 a.m., and 6 a.m. right here on 420radio.org. And you can catch our first hour replayed as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. We're also available for listening live on the 420 Radio app or on the TuneIn Radio app. But folks, there'll be some changes coming soon, so we'll keep you apprised of all of those as soon as we know more about them. Coming up on the show today, I'm really excited about today's guest for our Reformers Reader segment. The author of Stoned, A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana, is joining us. He is David Casseret, M.D., and I'm telling you, three out of the four endorsements on the back of the book are people who are good friends of the show. Dr. Donald Abrams, MD from San Francisco General Hospital, Clint Werner, the author of Marijuana Gateway to Health, and our own Dr. Mitch Earlywine has endorsed this book. So we'll talk to Dr. David Casseret, MD, at half past in our Reformers Reader. Also coming up on the show today, we'll have time for a radical rant. And do you smell that? Yeah, smells like shenanigans. There are some shenanigans going on again here in the state of Oregon having to do with a new ban on industrial hemp. We'll tell you more about the ban in our 420 Radio News, and I'm going to tell you what the shenanigans are, politically speaking, when we get to the radical rant at the end of the show. Before the rant, though, we have a special segment I'm going to give you, a history. The Real History of Drugs is a new video series that is out, and it produced these short, less than 3-minute videos on opium, cocaine, and of course, marijuana was one of them. We're going to play the audio from that coming up right before the Radical Rant as well. Little extra special piece here on the Russ Melville Show. Also on the show, in drug war data mining, the Republican voters in the first primary states are telling the feds to butt out of marijuana reform. We've got some poll numbers to show you, and the states' rights fringe of the Republican Party is definitely standing up. I shouldn't say fringe, states' rights element of the Republican Party, probably a better way to say it, standing up and telling the feds to butt out of marijuana law reform. Also, we're going to have a cannabis community chat right after the 420 Radio News that was inspired by something I saw while biking today. And it's called Will Marijuana Dabs Spark the Next Parent's Backlash? We'll talk about that. You can also read about that up on my marijuanapolitics.com column that debuts every day at noon Pacific time. But we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have the 420 Radio News for you. In the headlines, we've got a reaction by the government of the United Kingdom to a petition to legalize marijuana, a proposal for drug testing we got to tell you about, a new poll about marijuana legalization in Colorado, that news about Oregon and industrial hemp licenses, and the difficulty of finding warehouse space for your business in Denver, Colorado. All that coming up on the Russ Melville Show. And then in hour two, Toker Talk Radio will have more interesting stories to tell you and Electric Bob calling in with our daily Toker tunes of the day for Electric Tuesday. But the news is next. We're right back after this.
You're tuned into the Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
This is Joy Beckerman-Maher, and you're listening to 420radio.org. Hi, I'm Alex Rogers, producer of the 4th Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference, the OMMBC. There have been a lot of recent changes to Oregon cannabis laws. Recreational sales start October 1st, new licensing from the state, and changes to medical marijuana. Are you prepared? Join us at the downtown Portland Hilton September 12th and 13th with the industry's top cannabis business experts, political leaders, exhibitors, and nightly networking events. For more information, join us online or give us a call. The OMMBC. Be part of history.
Cannabis culture goes way back, you dig? Way before hippies and beatniks and pigs. Back to hep cats like Louis Armstrong and Cab Calloway. Soulful dames like Ella Fitzgerald and Billie Holiday. All the way to old Blue Eyes and the Rat Pack. So come spark up a jazz cigarette and take a trip back to when marijuana was jive, muggles, reefer, and tea. It's the new Viper Hour, daddy-o, see? The early 20th century archives of blues, jazz, and swing that define the cannabis culture and everything. Every Monday night at 8 p.m. and weekends at 1 a.m. Pacific on 420radio.org, the home for marijuana music. Yeah!
Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, neweracpas.com, handle your Cannabusiness 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPA's Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Replays of 420 Radio News are embeddable and shareable from our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/radicalruss. Now, the marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, August 25th, 2015. The government of the United Kingdom has responded to a 200,000-strong petition calling for the legalization of cannabis in the UK by saying it has no plans to change the law. The government said, quote, "Substantial scientific evidence shows cannabis is a harmful drug that can damage human health," end quote. Legalization would, quote, "send the wrong message to the vast majority of people who do not take drugs, especially young and vulnerable people," end quote, it added. However, the number of signatures the petition attracted means that members of Parliament must consider debating the issue in Parliament. All petitions that reach 100,000 signatures are given such consideration. The petition's argument that legalizing cannabis would bring in £900 million in taxes and reduce policing burdens was also rejected by the government. It said such benefits would be outweighed by the cost of administrative, compliance, and law enforcement activities, as well as drug prevention and health services. A proposal to test truck drivers' hair for drugs instead of checking their urine has ruffled the nation's truckers. Critics have suggested the hair drug testing is unproven and could discriminate against minorities who typically have coarser hair follicles. Supporters of the proposal, which is included in a highway bill that was passed in July by the Senate, say the tests are harder to beat than traditional tests for illicit items because signs of drugs last longer in hair follicles than in urine. Hair testing involves comparing testing a follicle of hair for signs of drugs within a window that is typically about 90 days long. However, quote, "it is widely known that hair specimens can test positive for a drug that its donor was merely exposed to but never actually ingested," end quote, the AFL-CIO's Transportation Trades Department wrote in a letter to a similar group of lawmakers on the House Transportation Committee. A poll sponsored by the Community Alliances for Drug-Free Youth shows that slightly more than half of Coloradoans are now opposed to marijuana legalization. According to a release from Smith Johnson Research, 51% of 600 likely voters in Colorado say they would vote against marijuana legalization if it came up today. The poll, which was conducted over the phone with self-identified 2012 voters, has a margin of error of plus or minus 4%. The survey results show a change in mood in the years since Amendment 64 was on the ballot, when 55% of Colorado voters supported legalizing recreational marijuana sales to adults over the age of 21. The anti-marijuana legalization group Smart Approaches to Marijuana, or SAM, was quick to herald the results as a sign that, quote, "Coloradoans are coming around to opposing legalization," end quote, according to Kevin Sabet, president of SAM.
Oregon has temporarily stopped issuing licenses for industrial hemp, citing a range of complex policy issues that emerged during the program's first year. Oregon Department of Agriculture officials said Tuesday their decision does not impact those currently licensed to grow hemp in the state. The decision is effective immediately and comes at the end of the current growing season. Officials hope to resolve the problems in time for next year's growing season, said Lindsay Ang, who oversees Oregon's hemp program. Ang said the decision is to stop issuing licenses is not tied to concerns by marijuana growers who do not want hemp planted near their crops. Marijuana producers say hemp production near their crops poses a risk for cross-pollination and threatens the quality of their cannabis crop. Ang said the agency needs to address a new law that reduces the license for hemp production from 3 years to one. Since voters in Colorado and Washington legalized adult use of marijuana in 2012, growers and distributors have gobbled up most of the available warehouse space in the Denver area, a major logistics hub for companies moving goods between the Midwest and the West Coast. The marijuana industry is poised to expand quickly. Legal sales in Colorado of medical and adult use cannabis totaled about $700 million in 2014. The number of active licenses to grow the plant for retail consumption shot up to 397 from 204, according to Colorado's Marijuana Enforcement Division. The problem for Denver business owners, marijuana producers require lots of space to grow, package, and store their products. In all, growers and distributors took up a third of all warehouse space leased in Colorado over the past 18 months, according to Cresa Partners, a brokerage. This has been your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, August 25th, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
The Russ Belville Show. Chat is for friends 18 and older. We expect our chat to be civil, mature, and free from excessive profanity. If you don't like these rules, there are approximately 6 billion other chat rooms with lower standards that you can visit.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
There's so much I worry about as a mom. Stephen Harper thinks that organized crime should continue to profit from marijuana prohibition. Imagine regulating marijuana like alcohol and cigarettes with a strong and clear educational message, making it more difficult for my kids and your kids to access. Drug dealers don't ask for ID. Stephen Harper does not have the kind of judgment we need to protect our children, authorized by the Normal Women's Alliance of Canada.
Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal. Ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers. The cannabis community is a diverse set of people from all walks of life, conservative and liberal, black and white, straight and gay, rich and poor, and everyone in between. Learn more about the people we are freeing from adult marijuana prohibition in our Cannabis Community Chat. Welcome back. And for the chat today, I took a bike ride today. I took a 10-mile bike ride out to an eye appointment so I can get some glasses for these fading eyes of mine. And I was riding my bike on the Interstate 205 multi-use path here in Portland. We have some pretty awesome biking infrastructure here. You can ride all the way down the freeway on a separate bike path. It's awesome. And then I came upon this circle of young people that were sitting on the left side of the path. Now,
I'm unable to discern their ages. I'm pretty old. I'm surprised if any of them would be eligible to run for the U.S. House of Representatives. They're probably all under the age of 25 for sure. And they were all intently watching as one young man was heating up a titanium nail on his bong, or dab rig, if you will, and preparing to share his marijuana extracts with his friends. I gotta say, the visual was a little jarring. Seven young people, odds on most of them probably weren't even 21 years old, to be honest, staring at one guy using a handheld blowtorch just 2 feet away from parched, yellow, dry grass in the middle of a public place while Portland is choking on the smoke from raging wildfires. Now, if that visual upset me, imagine how the soccer mom running on the trail will see it, and how she might vote on the next marijuana issue that makes the ballot. I'm age 47, so I'm straddling what is the newest generation gap in America, the 420-710 divide. Ahead of me are my 420 stoner friends in the baby boom generation who denigrate the dab culture sometimes as gluttonous or wasteful, abusive or dangerous even, as a way to consume cannabis. And behind me are my 710 stoner friends in the millennial generation who denigrate the herb culture as unhealthful, you know, plant matter, wasteful, tedious, takes too long, and anachronistic as a way to consume cannabis. So I'm kind of in the middle here, and I'm barely old enough to remember 1978. I was 10 years old, and that was the year that Normal's Keith Stropp and others in the nascent marijuana law reform movement of the early 1970s predicted that marijuana would finally be legalized at the federal level. 1978. President Carter had campaigned promising to decriminalize up to an ounce of marijuana as far back as 1975, and by 1977 was issuing it as a demand of Congress. But in 1978, that was the year the parents' backlash begun. Nebraska was the last of 11 states to decriminalize marijuana in the 70s. The president's drug advisor, Peter Bourne, was caught in a prescription drugs and cocaine scandal. Carter backed off of all his demands for marijuana reforms, and emboldened now, Sue Roosh, or Rush, formed a group called National Families in Action, which still propagandizes against pot to this day. In 1980, Ronald Reagan was elected. High Times' December 1980 cover featured a sexy woman on a bed offering four lines of cocaine on a mirror, and many of their articles and centerfolds featured cocaine and other drugs. Then, comedian Richard Pryor caught fire freebasing cocaine, and actor John Belushi and the NBA's number two draft pick Len Bias overdosed on cocaine and heroin in Belushi's case. And as I was starting high school, Nancy Reagan was telling us all to just say no. I was fortunate enough to miss the implementation of cops telling lies about drugs to scare kids into turning in their parents, otherwise known as DARE classes. But I remember vividly the leader of the parents' movement holding up a gas mask bong on TV, scaring the hell out of middle America. Weed, you see, would lead your kids into using scary paraphernalia in search of a better high, which would eventually lead to the cocaine or the crack or the heroin that leads to addiction and death. And that parents' backlash took the Gallup polls for marijuana legalization down from a high of 28% support in 1977 to a low of 23% support by the time I'm graduating high school in 1985. No states passed any marijuana law reforms from 1978 to 1996, and the Gallup poll didn't top that 28% mark until 2000. So, are marijuana dabs, rigs, and blowtorches the cocaine of the 2010s, potentially decreasing public support for marijuana legalization as they become more visible and popular? Could parents who have some familiarity with smoking a joint be scandalized by the sight of kids with dab rigs and blowtorches and then led to oppose or severely restrict legalization? And certainly the occasional nightly news story of motel rooms and apartments blown up from faulty cannabis extraction techniques isn't winning any voters to our side. We have 7,000 years of experience in human history of people using cannabis with very little ill effect to the consumer or society. We have experience with hashish dating back to the 15th century. But the modern hydrocarbon methods of extracting very pure cannabis oil are pretty new, and we haven't had generations of people chronically using dabs for an extended period of time. What if science shows there are permanent deleterious effects from such extreme use? Will that ignite the next parent's backlash? What?
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke.
Had a 420 failure there. There we go.
Well, Lottie frickin' duh!
I wrote that article and then from my van down by the river. Oh my God, something happened with the Libra meter there. My apologies, but we're back on track. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, drug war data mining. The Republican voters in Iowa and New Hampshire want the feds to butt out of marijuana law reform at the state level. Good news for our side.
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
You're listening to 420 Radio. Listen Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific for The Hash, podcasting at thehash.org. The Hash is a new podcast that's elevating the discourse around cannabis. Every other week, the cast of The Hash dishes out a smart, eclectic mix of breaking news, fresh music, exclusive interviews, advice, and commentary for a national and international audience. Check our online listings for The Hash from thehash.org.
The Fingerboard extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
In the Drug War Data Mines, we go to the Washington Post Wonk blog and the excellent work, once again, by Christopher Ingraham on today's post, noting that there are two polls going on in the current primary. You know, everyone's looking at Iowa and New Hampshire. Those are the first two states to have their Republican primary contests, Iowa and New Hampshire. And so, all the primary contests, come to think of it, I think the Democrats are out there too. So you'll see all these guys going to the Iowa State Fair and going up to New Hampshire to, you know, press the flesh and talk to folks and try to get their poll numbers up. And while everyone's talking about how Donald Trump is leading the Republican field far and away, and how Bernie Sanders has now in two polls in a row in New Hampshire topped Hillary Clinton, there's one issue that's beating them all, and that is states' rights for marijuana. Good news for our side. Ingraham writes that by significant margins, Republican voters in the early primary states of Iowa and New Hampshire say that states should be able to carry out their own marijuana laws without federal interference. 64% of GOP voters in Iowa say that states should be able to carry out their own laws versus only 21% who say that the federal government should arrest and prosecute people who are following state marijuana laws. In New Hampshire, that margin is even slightly higher, with 67% of GOP voters saying the Fed should stay out. Two out of three Republican voters in New Hampshire think the feds should leave marijuana alone in the states. The numbers, of course, higher for Democrats in both states. Democrats are close to 80% in Iowa, close to 77% in New Hampshire. And overall numbers, Democrats, independents, and Republicans together, the numbers are over 70% in both states for all voters. This was a survey conducted by Public Policy Polling, commissioned by our friend Tom Angel and Marijuana Majority. And it's probably bad news for Chris Christie and Mark Rubio. These two candidates have been saying recently that they would shut down legal marijuana in the states that have approved it. In a New Hampshire town hall meeting in late July, Ingraham wrote, Christie told voters, quote, "If you're getting high in Colorado today, enjoy it. As of January 2017, I will enforce the federal laws," end quote. He's also released a TV ad accusing President Obama of lawlessness for, among other things, allowing state-level marijuana laws to stand. And for Marco Rubio, his quote recently was, "I believe the federal government needs to enforce federal law," and he told ABC News, quote, "Marijuana is illegal under federal law. That should be enforced." Now, the effect on their campaigns, well, Chris Christie is currently polling 11th out of the 17 announced candidates for the Republican nomination. Marco Rubio's better off. Marco Rubio's in fifth place in the GOP horse race. Now, Rubio is probably positioning himself for a vice presidential nod, as he would be a great addition to a, say, a John Kasich ticket to help bring in a Latino vote. But as far as whether this is going to knock them out of the race, it will be hard to tell. The other Republican nominees have pretty much come out, if they've said anything about it, they've come up with a states' rights position. Jeb Bush, Carly Fiorina, Ted Cruz, Rick Perry, Rand Paul, Scott Walker, all have either given a muddled, confused sort of response on it, unclear, you know, waffle words that they use. Or when they've come out, they've said that, you know, it's not smart, it's not what I'd do, but I'd let the states do it if they choose to. Now, the Democratic side, of course, has Senator Bernie Sanders, who's been hinting for months now that he'll say more on marijuana reform. He recently released a policy platform about mass incarceration and ending some of the police practices around, that have led to that. All of these things are auguring for a Bernie Sanders that will be probably a champion of marijuana legalization. If so, this would sharply distinguish him, as Christopher writes, from his primary rival, Hillary Clinton. She's one of those wait and sees. Well, let's just wait and see. We need more evidence. Y'all, they're doing it in Washington, Colorado. Let's just wait and see. Let's see what happens. Well, as Christopher writes, and I agree, from a practical standpoint, this stance is more or less identical to what GOP candidates like Bush and Fiorina have been saying. Right. The states' rights argument on the Republican side is their default argument for, well, I'm not for pot, but let the states do what they will. Hillary Clinton saying, well, let's watch and see what happens. Let's get some more research on it, is the same stance. It's, well, I don't like it personally, but let the states do what they will. And of course, Donald Trump has been absent on the issue, hasn't really said much about this. Now, the pressure is building. The National Conference of State Legislatures passed a resolution urging the federal government to not just butt out of state marijuana laws, but to change the Controlled Substances Act to make sure that the federal government will butt out of the state marijuana laws. We'll keep you posted on how this affects the political race right here on the Russ Belville Show. Coming up, we've got our Reformers Reader joining us. For our discussion is David Kasseret. He's the author of Stoned, a doctor's case for medical marijuana, endorsed by Dr. Donald Abrams, Clint Werner, and Dr. Mitch Earlywine, all friends of the show. And then after the interview, we will give you a special, the audio from the new video of The Real History of Drugs on Marijuana from the group Attention. will help make this one go viral. And then we'll end the day with a radical rant on the Oregon hemp ban shenanigans.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. The Russ Belville Show. We're as much like Cheech and Chong as ordinary Americans are like the Three Stooges. Hey, Mo!
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the munchies. Not cool.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
The best weapon you can have in the Prohibition War is your mind. Fill your head with the knowledge you need by checking out this latest entry in the Russ Belville Show's Reformers Reader.
All right, welcome everybody. We are back and we've got a great book to talk about today. It's called Stoned, A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana. And the author is joining us now via our phone line, Dr. David Kasseret, MD. And David, am I pronouncing the last name okay? How does that pronounce?
Kasseret.
Well, I think I got it. Okay. And it's called A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana. And I got to say, sir, when I got the copy of the book, I saw the back has endorsements from Dr. Donald Abrams, Clint Werner, and Dr. Mitch Earlywine. They're all big friends of the show. We've had them on numerous times, so I knew this would be a good read, and it sure was. And I got to say also that it didn't just read as a polemic, you know, pro-marijuana written book. I mean, this seems a pretty objective look at this. What made you want to write this book and get into this field?
Well, the short answer is it was a patient I took care of probably a year and a half ago who asked me whether medical marijuana might help her. And I laughed and said, no, there's no evidence to support marijuana as a medicine. It's an illegal drug. And she pulled a couple of studies out of her handbag and passed them over to me. And they were randomized controlled trials, one done by Donald Abrams, the other done by a guy named Barth Wilsey, who's an anesthesiologist at UC Davis. And here I was learning about medical marijuana from one of my patients. And I realized that she knew a lot more about it than I did. So I should do a little bit of homework and learn something.
You know, we've told people listening to the show many times, you know, get the names of these studies, write them down, take them to your doctors. They'll respect the science. And it sounds as if you came in as a skeptic and the science has changed a lot of your positions.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Like I said, I really thought that medical marijuana was a joke. It was a chance for people to get high, some of whom had serious illnesses, some of whom didn't. I never would have guessed 2 years ago that there were actually serious researchers in this field, people doing randomized controlled trials, or a science of the endocannabinoid system. I'd never heard of Raphael Mishulam or any of his collaborators. So it's really been a learning experience for me.
That is something that's always shocked us the numerous times we've discussed it on the show, is how medical professionals like yourself can be blissfully unaware that there's even such a thing as the endocannabinoid system. How prevalent is that in the medical community, just not knowing it?
I think it's pretty much universal.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not taught about it in medical school, honestly. So, you know, if you don't get it in medical school, and you certainly don't get it in residency, there's really no reason for doctors to know about it. I'm not defending the entire field. You know, there are other ways to learn, but you know, honestly, there's so much stuff we have to learn in medical school. If it's not on the agenda, then most physicians are going to graduate and start practicing not knowing.
Now, it just amazes me. It'd be like a mechanic getting his certification with never being instructed on what transmissions are. It just seems ludicrous to me. And is there any push to maybe get this education in front of doctors at the academic level?
That's a good question. Certainly people like Donald, who you mentioned, has a faculty appointment at the University of California, San Francisco. And I know he does teaching for the medical students there. But for the most part, I would say conservatively 95% of medical schools, I'm guessing, I don't have any data to back this up, but I'm guessing most medical schools don't have anything about medical cannabis, or certainly not the endocannabinoid system, on the curriculum. That's probably changing. I mean, it's legal now medically in 23 states plus the District of Columbia. So, you know, there are a lot of physicians we're getting out in practice who are getting questions about this. So I think it's going to change. It'll take some time, though.
Well, let's hope so. We're speaking with Dr. David Kasseret, MD. He's the author of Stoned, A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana. And here, this show and our audience, they're well informed on the medical uses of cannabis and a lot of the science behind it. So let's go to the other side of the coin, which is, as a skeptic, someone coming in from outside our community, what are some things that our medical marijuana side are saying or doing that maybe need a little bit of correction, in your opinion?
Well, I'm not sure about correction. There's certainly a lot of claims about the usefulness of medical cannabis in curing cancer. Mm. And those claims concern me, not because they're totally crazy. I mean, as your listeners know, there's actually some really interesting data from animal studies and cell culture studies. And Donald Abrams actually talked me through a lot of those studies, that there's evidence that cannabinoids actually decrease cell differentiation, cancer cell differentiation, reduce the rate at which cancer cells form new blood vessels, which helps them grow. And that's fascinating stuff, but it's a bit of a leap to say that because of those test tube studies, then people could give up chemotherapy, radiation therapy, and surgery and put all of their hope in concentrated cannabis oil. Maybe cannabinoids will be useful in treating cancer 5-10 years from now. Right now, though, I would feel much better if we backed off on some of those claims and focused on other claims for which there actually is data, like the treatment of neuropathic pain, muscle spasms in MS, nausea. I mean, that's where the evidence is. That's what we should be trumpeting.
Excellent. And that's interesting as well, because as we look throughout the battles to get medical marijuana throughout the states over history, there's always been a claim from the other side. Whenever we bring up pain, they kind of put air quotes around it. Yeah, pain, you got a backache. But legitimately, that's where most of the science is in the treatment of pain, correct?
Well, most of the science is actually in neuropathic pain. So yeah, you're right, but mm-hmm. a specific kind of pain that's due to nerve injury. So Barth Wilsey, who I mentioned before, as an anesthesiologist, was faced with a lot of his patients who had really difficult to manage neuropathic pain. And the way he tells the story to me was, he wasn't really a medical cannabis researcher, but he was hearing from all of these patients that medical cannabis was helping them. And so he began to start studying it empirically in randomized controlled trials. And the other interesting thing of his research is that it's partly the THC that's valuable, but also the CBD. And he's doing trials that push down the concentration of THC and push up the concentration of CBD, thinking that that might actually have more benefits. So there may be some real benefits to CBD and neuropathic pain that we don't really understand yet.
There's also indication that you experimented on yourself for some of your research in this. How did the experience of using cannabis for different applications differ from maybe what your expectations of it might have been? Did you learn anything in trying it yourself? And how old were you when you first did it?
Well, when I first did it medically was when I was writing this book. So I'm in my 40s okay. right now. So this is pretty recent. I mean, I'm not a recreational user, not out of moral or ethical issues or legal issues. I'm just not. So I'm kind of naive. And I think that the big lesson to me was when I used it for a bout of acute back pain, which any of your listeners have ever had that happening. You're walking along, minding your own business. You reach down to tie your shoes, and all of a sudden you can't move. It's really a pretty miserable experience. Mm-hmm. And tried marijuana that I got from a friend of a friend. And you know, one lesson there was it actually did help. I mean, it really did help with the spasms. I was pretty amazed. But the other lesson there was I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what I was getting. Clint mm-hmm. Werner says that the technical term for what I did was overtoking. I took way, way too much of it because I was miserable and I was looking for relief. And so the big lesson for me is that for people who are using it often for the first time without any experience, you really need somebody to give you advice. You need to get it through a dispensary where they tell you what the THC concentration is, what the CBD concentration is, you know, so you know what you're about to get. I had some weird experiences, auditory, visual hallucinations, which are pretty rare, but happen. Not that those are awful side effects, but I could have avoided those if I had gotten it from a dispensary and gotten at least a little bit of advice along the way.
Right. That's part of the case for, you know, legalization and regulation is without it, we're sending people out to the street corners and the parking lots to get some unknown herb in a bag. And then what, you know, how do you use it? What's the best way to use it? It just seems irresponsible to not legalize, in my opinion. We're speaking with Dr. David Kasserit, MD. He's the author of Stoned, A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana. And there's another part in your talking points here about the effects of marijuana on the brains of long-term users. And I'm a 25-year long-term heavy user, and I'm afraid that my brain may be working differently than yours. Is that true?
Well, you know, it's really tough to tell. You know, there are, to be fair, there are some studies that have found long-term brain changes, meaning shrinkage of some areas of the brain, particularly the cortex, the amygdala, the core of the brain is responsible for especially emotional memories. Also some studies showing some changes in thinking and the way we process information among long-term heavy users. But there are two caveats to that. One is that a couple of studies have looked at both of those things, brain changes and brain function, and haven't been able to find a connection. So yes, the brains may look different and the thinking may look different, but there doesn't seem to be any correlation between the brain functional changes and the structural changes. It makes you wonder, well, you know, is there really an effect there, or is it just coincidence? The other issue is that in a lot of these studies of long-term effects, we don't really know what other people of the drugs people were getting. Yeah, they were using marijuana maybe once a day, but some of them were using OxyContin, crystal meth, heroin, all of which have long-term brain effects. So how many of those effects were really due to just the marijuana itself? So I think it's really, it's tough to say that because of those studies, a long-term recreational user really has a risk. I think it's possible, honestly. And my advice would be that if you really want to stay as sharp as possible for as long as possible, you might want to cut down your use. But that's still pretty speculative. I can't say that with a whole lot of data. It's just kind of my intuition looking at a bunch of studies.
You know, and it's kind of a loaded question because my brain works differently than a whole lot of people's, Doc. So it's not quite fair. Dr. David Kasserit, MD, author of Stoned, A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana. Doctor, if they want to get a hold of this book, you got any suggestions, websites to tell them about?
Sure. The book is Stoned, A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana. It's on sale at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com as an e-reader and as a book. You can also go to my website, davidkasserit.com. I'm embarrassed to admit I actually have a website, but I do. It's davidkasserit.com, and you can find out how to buy it from there, too.
Final question, Doctor. Do you have kids, and what do they think of the book?
I don't have kids.
Okay.
My dog seems pretty enthusiastic about it, but he's a border collie and he's just naturally enthusiastic about everything.
The smartest dog, I understand, of all the breeds.
Not necessarily this one.
Not necessarily this one. All right. Well, thank you so much for writing the book. I think it's invaluable for those of us who are embedded in this marijuana movement, marijuana culture, to get the opinions and the perspective of people coming at it from the outside, an objective, educated doctor's opinion on what's going on. Thanks for joining us on the show, David, and good luck on the book sales.
Thanks. Have a lot of fun. Really appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Take it easy. And we'll have a copy of this interview available on our SoundCloud page for embedding. You can find it at soundcloud.com/radicalruss. All right. When we come back, we're going to have time for a radical rant. But before that, a new video. We're just going to play the audio, obviously, for the real history of drugs. telling you everything you ever wanted to know about the history of marijuana. After that, a radical rant on Oregon hemp ban shenanigans. Shenanigans!
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
420 Radio is brought to you by Sacred Serum, who is focused on creating elegant and sophisticated cannabis solutions through its line of dispensers and vaporizers that come preloaded with the world's finest cannabis concentrate. Sacred Serum's concentrate is made on pharmaceutical-grade supercritical CO2 extraction machines that use absolutely no butane or other toxic chemicals. The Vesica, the company's innovative new way to dab and frost, is now available in dispensaries across California. Sacred Serum, elegance and sophistication concentrated.
Welcome back. Tony Newman from the Drug Policy Alliance has a post on Huffington Post today about the real history of drugs. And these are some catchy, well-produced videos that have been viewed millions of times on Facebook. And they're from a group called Attention, ATTN. And this is the marijuana edition of their real history of illegal drugs. Check them out at ATTN online and on Facebook. Here is the marijuana one. All right, this is what happens when I take a gamble. I watched through the video, but I had them on mute, and I saw all the graphics coming up, and I said, surely they've got a voiceover to go with this. But apparently not, so I'll bring this back tomorrow, and we'll have a voiceover ready for it. Because right now, it's just some interesting drum music. Yeah, we're doing it live. We'll be right back.
Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
A lot of drug abuse messages are full of statistics. How many people die, how many lives are ruined, how much drug use is costing the economy. But this message isn't about numbers. It's about crack. And the message is simple. Crack can kill you. I won't bore you with the statistics, except to say that it's not worth becoming one for a 10-minute high.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org.
We
must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical rant.
Well, earlier today in the 420 Radio News, I told you about how the state of Oregon's Department of Agriculture has dropped or stopped issuing industrial hemp licenses. This is reported by Noel Crombie of the Oregonian. And this is an interesting story. And as I noted, the official who oversees Oregon's hemp program, Lindsay Ng, said that the decision to stop issuing licenses is not tied to concerns raised by marijuana growers who do not want hemp planted near their crops. Marijuana producers say hemp production near their crops poses a risk for cross-pollination and threatens the quality of their cannabis crop. So, okay, that's interesting. Now, maybe Noel asked the question, and they're just responding to it, but it seems interesting to point that out, that anybody would be concerned about that. Ng said instead the agency needs to address a new law that reduces the license for hemp production from 3 years to one. The changes take effect January 1st. We didn't feel it was prudent to continue issuing three-year licenses when so much might change. So the argument here is here in August, toward the end of the first growing season where we have 13 hemp licensees, we must not issue any new hemp licenses from August through December, because those would be three-year licenses. Like the other 13 people who currently have licenses, who presumably got them this year, so those 13 will have two more years to grow. We can't issue any new ones because they'd have 3 years to grow, because the law's changing in January that you only get 1 year to grow. You have to renew your license every year. Why is it so troubling to issue a license in the next 5 months or 4 months? If, you know, this month's almost over, September through December, why is it so troubling to issue a 3 year license over the next 4 months? I don't understand. But as I thought about this, that one paragraph stood out to me. It's not tied to concerns raised by marijuana growers who do not want hemp planted near their crops. The Oregon Department of Agriculture just decided to cap it at 13 hemp growers and not have any more. Is that it? Really? Well, I posted this on Twitter. And I snarkily posted it on Twitter, saying, you know, that we should extend Farioli's West Idaho Compromise to plant hemp only in the east of the Cascades and marijuana only west of the Cascades. If the mountains don't stop cross-pollination, I don't know what will. And when I tweeted about it, I said, growers pack bitched about cross-pollination. And this got a response from a guy whose handle is Seth Oregon, who says, Radical Russ, check the link between ODA Director Koba and her lobbyist husband to better understand this. Quote, Oregonians for Better Health, end quote. Followed by, I bet ODA Director Koba's SEI form from April 2015 didn't list husband's medical pot lobbying contract. Do I detect the faint odor of shenanigans? Sounds like some political shenanigans. So on the tip from Seth Oregon, I decided to look. So I went to the Oregon Department of Agriculture's webpage, oregon.gov/ODA. And there's a welcome right there from the director of the ODA. Her name's Katie Koba. Katie Koba was named the director in 2003. She's a former Pendleton Roundup queen, you know, the barrel racing and that kind of thing, right? And has a BS in economics from Whitman College, was raised on a wheat ranch, played college basketball, and did color commentary for TV for high school basketball games. She's the director of the Oregon Department of Agriculture for the past 12 years. Okay. Got a BS in economics is our agricultural director. Okay. And then in the listing for family, it says husband Marshall. So Marshall Koba, I went to a new tab and I said, well, let's look up Marshall Koba. And on the Oregonians, your government page at gov.oregonlive.com, it shows that Marshall A. Koba of Koble Company LLC is employed by the American Council of Engineering Companies of Oregon. He's a lobbyist, by the way, registered lobbyist, Mr. Koba is. Registered lobbyist whose clients and employers are the American Council of Engineering Companies of Oregon. Okay. Associated Liquor Stores of Oregon. Interesting. E-Health Insurance Incorporated. Okay. K-12 Incorporated. All right. And there it is. Oregonians for Better Health Incorporated that Seth Oregon mentioned. So I clicked that to get another tab. What is Oregonians for Better Health? Well, it's a lobbying client headquartered in Bend, Oregon. Okay, interesting. And I couldn't find much more on Oregonians for Better Health. They're a domestic nonprofit headquartered in Bend. Doesn't say much more about them online other than their file numbers and all that kind of stuff. But the company's been around for 7 months. 7 months. They filed in January of 2015. What was also happening in January 2015? Oh, yeah. We passed marijuana legalization and the legislature was coming into session. So this Marshall Koba appears to be a registered lobbyist working for a company called Oregonians for Better Health that only got formed in January. And according to someone on Twitter, has a contract to lobby for the medical marijuana industry. Now, I can't confirm that yet, but I'll be doing some digging, getting some public records requests. Because it sounds to me like the lobbyist for the medical marijuana industry, the lobbyist for the industry that contains the growers who are complaining in Southern Oregon that their medical crops will be contaminated by the cross-pollination of industrial hemp, somehow that fella being married to the director of the state agency that just ceased issuing hemp licenses seems a bit to me like a connection. So, Eng said the decision to stop issuing licenses is not tied to concerns raised by marijuana growers who do not want hemp planted near their crops. Oh, really? No tie whatsoever that the woman in charge of the agency that just banned new hemp licenses is married to a man who is a medical marijuana lobbyist. No connection. No connection. It's all just coincidence. Smelling a little bit of shenanigans here. Now, this whole cross-pollination issue, I think, has been way overblown. pardon the pun now that I think about it. I think it's way overblown. I don't think there's near the risk these medical marijuana growers are complaining about. What I think this has to do with is making a move on what agricultural lands will be available to grow psychoactive cannabis. This is the state of Oregon picking one type of cannabis over the other for which gets to have access to the best available farming plots there are. I say take Ferrioli's West Idaho Compromise and just extend it to its logical conclusion. The folks east of the Cascade Mountains don't like psychoactive marijuana, and they're all a bunch of farmers. So let's put the hemp farms out there. The people west of the Cascades like marijuana legalization and are a bunch of medical marijuana growers down in the south mostly. So let's have all the psychoactive cannabis on this side. If the mountain range can't stop the cross-pollination, nothing will. I call shenanigans. That's all the time we got for today's podcast hour, but you listeners who are on the live 420 radio stream or listening on TuneIn Radio app or the 420 radio app on your mobile phones, stay tuned for hour two, Toker Talk Radio. And if you can't get Toker Talk Radio, You can get it on demand at 420radio.org by becoming a VIP of 420 Radio. Just go to 420radio.org/donate. For everyone here at 420 Radio's Rolla J Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.